Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And with T-Mobile, we get the best 5G coverage in the game, so we won't miss a play. Whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with T-Mobile, the network with more 5G bars and more places. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile today. T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network. See 5G device, coverage, and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to From Complex to Queens, a Mason Avenue's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Seiba, and I'm joined this week by Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good.
Yep, same. Doing good. It was a nice weekend. A lot to get to this week, so we're just going to jump right into things. And the Syracuse Mets, they played the Worcester Red Sox this week. They went 2-4 against them and dropped to 52-71 on the year. Now, the Charlotte Knights, who are the worst team in the International League, they are 6-4 in their last 10. Syracuse is 3-7, and they play the pretty tough Scranton Wilkes-Barre Railriders this upcoming week. So, in theory, Syracuse could drop to dead last by the time we record our show next week. Not optimal. Win, lose, or draw, though, they will be doing it without Francisco Alvarez, who sat out a few games early in the week, and it's now being reported that he's dealing with an ankle injury that may or may not need surgery. The headlines are a little sensationalist because, you know, this injury is going to keep him out for the rest of the season. Well, the rest of the season is basically a month long. So, saying he's going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks and saying he's going to be out for the rest of the season, same thing really in effect at this point of the year. It will have an impact, though, on the Mets calling him up, if you were in favor of that, for, you know, a September call-up. Regardless of whether or not he needs surgery on whatever the issue is, obviously there's a 0% chance that he gets called up to the Mets now. One thing, though, that it might affect is whether or not the Mets send him to the AFL, the Arizona Fall League, if they were thinking about sending him to the Arizona Fall League. Depending on the severity of the injury and whether or not he's going to need surgery on it, that's going to dictate whether or not he goes or not. Would you send him, assuming that it doesn't need surgery and he just needs to, you know, not crouch behind the home plate for a couple of weeks? Would you send him to the AFL?
Probably now, yeah. I wouldn't if he was healthy when the season ended, because I feel like he's above that now. But if he misses a month or so and he's healthy by that time, then I see no real reason to not give him some reps. It's kind of meaningless reps because he's way better than the competition there, but it gets him back on the field and back in the batter's box a little bit before spring training. It kind of resets his clock a little bit.
Yeah, I don't see any harm in sending him and, just letting him hit.
Yeah, I wouldn't let him catch runners, anything.
So if he's capable of doing it, why not?
Yep, agreed. All right, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies now. They played the Reading Fighting Phils. They went 4-1. With the last game of the series in progress as we're recording right now, and they're winning 5-4 for whatever that counts. Mets bullpens, though, are historically not great, so we'll see. But they, you know, with this 4-1 week, they boosted their record to 19-30 in the second half, and they are 10 games back. And it's crazy to think about how bad this team has been when they started the season with so much excitement. They had Francisco Alvarez, Brett Beatty, and Ronnie Mauricio rostered there, and a bunch of lesser-heralded prospects like Jake Mangum, Hayden Senger, Jose Budo, Brian Matuyer, Carlos Cortez. You know, that team has basically been irrelevant since June.
Yeah, they've been out for a long time.
And especially so in the last month when, you know, Alvarez got promoted, Beatty got promoted, Jose Budo, I guess, you know, in the last 2 weeks or so, whenever it was, got promoted. Poor Binghamton.
Yeah, it's just they're in the very middle of the system, and there's just nothing really there at the moment. All the exciting guys either when they were there was just Beatty and Alvarez really, and they got promoted. And on the other side, it was everyone else exciting is younger than them. Like Mauricio's there, but he's kind of taking a step back, so there's not much to get excited about in Binghamton.
Yeah, all the guys that are exciting are in the lower levels, and one of those teams had a really good week, and that was the Brooklyn Cyclones, and they played the Jersey Shore Blue Claws, and they swept the series. They went a perfect 6-0, and on Sunday, they had about as dominant a win as you can in baseball. They beat Jersey Shore 18-1. It's too bad that that they allowed that one run. It would have been better. 18-0 shutout. I went to a lot of Cyclone Blue Claws games this year, and there was a lot of Cyclones wins. And so I was just like, I wonder how many games they actually won. And they went 17-4 against the Blue Claws. So that will play. It just basically shows that, you know, New York is better than New Jersey.
I vehement. I disagree wholeheartedly. I'm just fighting words.
Well, if you say so. But with this big week, Brooklyn is now a half game behind the Hudson Valley Renegades. So playoff hopes are alive. And who would have thought, given how bad, you know, the Cyclones were in the first half. But a lot of, you know, in the second half, a lot of guys got promoted that, like yeah. Thomas was just saying, a lot of those guys that are talented and are the future were starting off in St. Lucie and got promoted. Now they're in Brooklyn and they're doing their thing.
And then, like, obviously, guys will trail off and some guys will pop and be better than they were. But that's how Binghamton gets better. And that's how Syracuse get better, is they just kind of work their way through the system. Like, it cycles. It runs in cycles. Sometimes your teams are going to be bad and sometimes your teams are going to be really good. And the goal is that eventually you're like, your teams are good all over the organization. But that takes time and the Mets aren't there yet.
Getting there.
For sure.
St. Lucie, you know, as good as Brooklyn was this week, St. Lucie was kind of the opposite. They had a lousy week. They played the Palm Beach Cardinals in a battle for first place, and they went 1-5, with Sunday's game being canceled because of rain. So they came into the series 26-21, tied for first place, and they're now ending at 27-26, 3 games back. They won the first half, though, so they're guaranteed a playoff berth, so it doesn't really matter. But, you know, as people that have to watch these games and recap these games every day, we definitely prefer the teams to win as much as possible. Makes things a bit more palatable, yeah. And finally, the FCL Mets. We don't talk about them too much in detail, but they finished their regular season 33-22 on the year, and they had a playoff berth, so they played the FCL Rays in the Florida Complex League semifinals, but they lost 7-4, so that knocked them out of the playoffs. Javier Atencio, he started. He was solid for 2 innings. He was followed by Robert Colina. He was also solid for 3 more. The Mets, meanwhile, they did manage to take the lead. Vincent Perozzo, he had a pair of RBI, and the Mets were up 2-0. And then in the 7th inning, Brian Gursky and Luis Rodriguez, they gave up 4 runs combined, and that gave the Rays the lead. The Mets did tie things up at 4-4 in the top of the 8th inning, but then in the bottom of the 8th, Christopher Vasquez, he gave up 3 more runs, and that was all she wrote. So starting pitcher showed up, the offense showed up, but the bullpen let everybody down. Again, sounds very Metsian. All right, so that was the Mets minor league system in a nutshell here. So before we get to everything else, you know, obviously the Mets had Old Timers Day this weekend, the first time in like 30 years, whatever it was, you know, obviously the first time in basically all of our lifetimes that we could remember. What did you guys think of everything? I mean, I thought it was like, at first I was like, okay, yeah, cool, whatever. But then actually like watching the introductions and then watching them play, that was super fun.
Yes. I was texting our friend of the pod, Rich Staff, about all of this. But basically, I didn't care much about the Old Timers Day when it was announced. I was like, yeah, whatever, okay. The Mets don't have a lot to celebrate, really, and it's going to be just a few teams and a few guys. But I think I thought that because that's how the Wilpons told me to think about the Mets for 20 years, 28 years of my life, you know? Like, the Wilpons clearly didn't give a shit. So if the team doesn't give a shit, why should me, a fan, give a shit about it? And then I watched, like, all these old-timers, like, literal old-timers, like, 1962 Mets and guys from the 60s pitch and play and, like, be celebrated, and it was really cool. So it was cooler than I expected it to be, and I blame the Wilpons for me thinking about that for most of my life. But
definitely, when in doubt, blame the Wilpons.
Exactly.
Ken, were you able to catch it?
I didn't get to watch much of it, but the little bit that I did get to see, honestly, I feel like it just made a lot of people happy. So
yeah, like those guys playing, like that's awesome. Like that's awesome for a lot of those guys. Like sure, Piazza gets celebrated and the big names too, but there was a lot of dudes who don't get celebrated and deserve to for various reasons, and that's really cool.
Yep. That I think was my favorite thing. Like during one of the interviews with Gary Apple and Jim Duquette before the actual Mets game started, I think they were sitting down with Jay Payton and they were saying that like it's so fun to see guys that don't get a lot of public appearances that kind of slip through the cracks. Because, you know, like you were saying, we always see, you know, certain teams. We see the 1986 guys all the time. We see a lot of, you know, guys that have been employed with the Mets as coaches or like SNY analysts. But how often do we get to see Benny Agbayani, you know? How often do we get to see Todd Hundley?
I mean, Ray Knight was like, I haven't been invited around to anything. Yeah. 30 years or whatever, and he's one of the two World Series MVPs that the Mets have. Of course, he wasn't a Met forever. He was a Met for a very short time. But if you think about the 86 team, Ray Knight is one of the guys who comes to your mind because he was huge, and they won the World Series in large part because of him.
I mean, literally one of the most famous quotes is involves Ray Knight, you know. But I mean, where else are you gonna see like 80-year-olds throwing fucking strikes? Jay freaking Hook, man.
Yeah, exactly. All that shit. When's the last time, like, Jay Hook, and I think this was, I'm paraphrasing Rich here, it's almost the same, it's almost an exact quote, but he was like, when's the last time anyone asked these guys about their playing career? And they were major league players. Mm-hmm. And now they're on Citi Field's mounds throwing strikes and getting cheered. That's awesome. Like, that's going to be one of the things that they talk about for the rest of their lives. They're going to tell people about how cool that was, and that's that stuff's important too.
And it was, you know, nice to see Bartolo. I mean, he's still in pitching shape.
Shit, he looks in better shape now than he did in 2015.
It was nice to see Pedro. Like, it was so fun. But you know, in honor of Old Timers Day, I thought we should do something similar, a monolingual Old Timers Day, basically. We used to end the shows with Oh Yeah, That Guy, where we went back into the past box scores. And we found the guy who had a great week during the whatever period of time, you know, it was that we were discussing. But to be honest, that was a lot of work. And, you know, after almost 3 years and like 200 episodes now, it started getting hard to find the guys who we didn't already, you know, cover. And, you know, we're having the second best week, we're having the third best week, whatever. But basically, we are going to have a Modern League Old Timers Day here with the same general concept. You know, we're going to celebrate some old names who never really made it, and they've kind of been forgotten about as we've all moved on. But for whatever reason, they still stick in our memories. Could be good reasons, could be bad reasons, could be dumb reasons, whatever. But all that matters is that they are Mets minor leaguers and they haven't been forgotten. So we are going to make up teams of 10, a catcher, a first baseman, a middle infielder, since, you know, in the minor leagues, a lot of shortstops play second, a lot of second basemen play shortstop. It really just depends on the composition of the team. A third baseman, two outfielders, and four pitchers. So that's a total of 10 players. So, I mean, I guess we'll just go position by position here. I don't know what's easier to do. Just everyone goes all at once, or just we kind of cycle through position? What do you guys think? What do you guys want to do?
We could do position by position.
All right, that works then.
What makes an Effort Road Trip even more epic? When you get to hit the highway and stay connected with your team at the same time. There's no reason to settle for anything less as a baseball fan. And with T-Mobile, you have it all at your fingertips because T-Mobile has the best 5G coverage in the game. These days, when you're out and about, you want to use your phone for everything. From staying on the right track with GPS, finding local restaurants, streaming your favorite podcasts, like this one, of course, and catching your favorite MLB team on the go so you don't miss a beat. This summer, thanks to T-Mobile 5G, I'll be heading out on my travels without a care in the world and won't have to worry about FOMO from missing a walk-off win because I'm on the road. So step up today, fellow baseball fans, and make sure to switch to T-Mobile, the network with more 5G bars in more places. T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network. See 5G device, coverage, and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Pet lovers know that the dogs and cats we love are true family members. That's why sudden trips to the vet are so stressful for humans and animals alike. They're also costly. Fetch by the Dodo offers unmatched pet insurance that reimburses up to 90% of unexpected vet bills. They even cover things that others don't, like visits to emergency clinics, exam fees, and treatment for breed-specific issues. Plus, you can keep seeing the vet your little buddy already loves. You know, the one with the good treats. For a limited time, get up to 10% off Fetch Pet Insurance every month for a year. Get your free personalized quote at fetchpet.com/vox.
All right, so our first Mets minor league old-timer will be catcher. So who would like to? Does anyone want to volunteer?
I have a fun one because he wasn't always a catcher. He caught for – they tried to make him a catcher. I mentioned him in the Slack group before. But remember when they tried to make Jay Jabs a catcher for like a week and it didn't really work? So – I always wanted teams he is a special place in my heart because I always want teams when the guy is like a good athlete and a good fielder or something like that, but can't hit, see if they could catch, because why not? Because catchers can't hit anyway. So if they somehow have like an innate ability back there that they never tapped into, just try it. You know what I mean? Like, Let's say in an alternate reality, he ended up being a really good catcher. Imagine having like a speedy backup catcher who could play the infield and the outfield and also catch like that. Saves a bunch of roster spots and it makes you really unique. And I think stuff like that is, I always want teams to try that and they never do. And the Mets did that with him for a little bit. I think it was like a few games and it didn't really work, but still like that type of thing sticks in my head. So that's what I'm choosing for catcher.
Plus his name is Jay Jabs.
Exactly.
Not to gloss over the lead or anything like that.
And he was like a full on Columbia legend. Like, I feel like he was there for like 2 years and was a fan favorite and like he ruled. Like he was one of those minor league guys who you kind of root for. Like we root for all of them, but everyone has your guys. And he was always one that was like, I hope he makes it.
Mm-hmm. I want to say that he was from like Southern Pennsylvania or something like that. Like I don't know where
Schweckensville or whatever Pennsylvania is, but
that's yeah, Schweckensville. But yeah, there were a lot of times when he would have like entire sections that were just like the J-Jab section.
It's that rules. Like I love that shit. And
All right, Ken, who is your catcher?
I'm just gonna go with Ali Sanchez.
Good old Ali Sanchez.
Had real high hopes for him. Didn't really pan out, but caught in the big leagues and I believe is still in affiliated ball.
He was in the Cardinals organization last night.
Yeah.
I was expecting the Cardinals to do some Cardinal shit and turn it
into, yeah. You know. Yeah. Yachty too.
Yep.
No.
Thankfully that didn't happen. Yeah, I liked Ali Sanchez. If only his hit tool was a little bit better. But literally, you can say that about every single player that we're going to talk about here. So,
hell of a catcher, though.
Yes, yes. My guy's like I don't want to say the exact opposite, but Andrés Rolnall, who was a catcher from 2016 to 2019, and honestly, the only reason why I care about him at all is because I guess the people that be at the Topps Corporation, they said, hey, we should give this guy a baseball card because he had decent numbers at Kingsport in 2019. And out of the blue, I got an unsolicited email from a Topps editor saying they wanted to use a photo that I took. So thanks to Andres and Alt, I legit have a baseball card, which is so fucking awesome. So thank you, Andres and Alt, for the good memories.
Friend of the podcast.
And then to make things, I don't know if it makes things better or worse, but then I found out that his agent, this part was really like fucked up, really. His agent was using the same photo and they never even asked me. And I sent them an angry worded email. And then I was like, oh shit, like this might like get nasty.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but then he got released and that was the end of that. So, but you would think an actual like professional agent wouldn't be using.
Yeah.
Unlicensed photos of people. All right. Moving on to first base now. Thomas, who's your first baseman?
Dash Winningham.
Hell yeah. We love
now
Dash.
Now that's a dude. I just saw him a lot in Brooklyn. I remember him. Really is really what it is. He's one of those guys who's always like in the middle of their lineups. And he was like your classic big bopper guy who you knew wasn't going to make it, but you wanted him to anyway type guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he just ruled.
So far you're coming on strong with the best team name with Jade Jabs and Dash Winningham. Ken, who's your first baseman?
I'm going to go with Joe Gennord.
Classic.
That's like the Dash Winningham spiritual successor.
Yeah, he was.
He was like God at Brooklyn and like had just enough bat speed for like the Penn League. And then things went poorly immediately after there.
He came in with a bang and he left with a whimper.
Always reminded me of like Pete Alonso before he fixed his swing.
How does the meme go?
They were like entirely different
players. Right.
Pete Alonso. You
know. How does the meme go? Like we have whatever at home. Joe Gennord is home. Exactly. Yeah. My first baseman is Matt Oberste, who played from 2013 to 2018. He wasn't really good. He wasn't really bad. He just kind of was eh. But it feels like every game I went to for years, Matt Oberste was there. Went to see Brooklyn, there's Matt Oberste. Went to see Binghamton, there's Matt Oberste. So I'm pretty sure that he has like my record for the guy that I've seen the most and completely unintentional. All right, next up is the infielder. Thomas,
this is like infielder. It's shortstop, second base, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I got a good one. Rhys Havens. Now that was a dude who you thought was going to be good because he had like, I think it was in 2010, he hit 312, 386, 592 across two different leagues, like across high A and double A. And you're like, oh yeah, like this is the money ticket. And nope.
But yeah, I mean, he was supposed to be good.
That's one of those things, like, those guys are always interesting to me, because something happens along the way, either they don't develop the way you think, or there's a hole in the swing that you don't see, or that gets exposed or something. I can't remember what it is specifically about Rhys Havens, but I remember him being a prospect that I was looking at and reading at when I was young, because obviously in 2010 I was a kid, not a kid, but I was younger, and I wasn't really hyper-focused on the minor leagues, but even I knew who that was, and because he was a bigger name.
Rhys Havens, I remember, had the rib surgery, but I don't know the timeline of that. I don't remember how much, you know, it affected him, but he was supposed to be a guy, and unfortunately, he did not become a guy. Ken, who's your infielder?
TJ Rivera.
Ah, good old TJ. He is in the mold of the Josh Sattons and the Eric Campbells and a long line of mediocre greats.
Rivera had a legit bat to ball ability too.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he didn't sacrifice his ligament to the Mets third base job in what was it, like 2017?
Something like, yeah, because he was part of the 2016.
He might still playoff. Be playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was part of the 2016 playoff run. He was important. Like, unironically so.
I went with Luis Santana, who played from 2016 to 2018. And then I remember going down to Kingsport and seeing him for the first time and being like, holy crap. Like, I know this guy's only 5'6", supposedly, but I think that's being, like, generous because his stance, he crouched, and he was maybe, like, 3 inches taller than the catcher, who was, you know, in an actual crouch. So he was tiny. And as a short guy, I can appreciate a fellow short guy hitting 348 and having a 917 OPS, you know. So good. And after he got traded, you know, everyone kind of wrote him off and being like, see, the Mets traded, you know, Detritus and got back JD Davis, who was having a good season in 2019. But Luis Santana, you know, he was injured a couple of years, but he's actually having a pretty good season this year. He might be like back on the map, which, you know, good for him.
Dope.
All right. Third baseman now.
Oh, I have a good one. I have another good one. Mm-hmm. So this guy played a long time in the minors. He played 881 games in the minors and in the Indies. But Joe Giannetti is who I'm picking, and he was a big member of the 2001 Cyclones, and I had season tickets to those teams. Me and my family used to be Cyclone season tickets holders. He hit in 2001 for the Cyclones, hit 348, 420, 487.
Damn.
And he was real damn good at 19 in that league. And I was like, oh shit, that's a player. And he just ended up being like an indie ball guy who flamed out he hit double A as his highest level and never made it past there. But he was a real good, he was one of those guys who's like just good in and out to watch as a 6 year old watching baseball in the minor leagues. Like, I have no idea who's good or not. So
it's impressive that he hit that well. I mean, guys traditionally suck in Brooklyn with the bats. So
yep.
The guys that hit that well are far and few in between.
I wonder if anything happens, like if he got hurt or something, but
Definitely precedes me, so I don't really know.
I was six, so
Ken, who you got?
I'm so sorry, I cut out for a bit. What position are we on?
Third base.
Oh, Jace Boyd. This is kind of cheating, but Jace Boyd.
Fair.
Binghamton classic. Famously hit the walk-off, the game-winning double in the championship game. Reportedly great dude. Great name.
I was always a fan of Jace Boyd. I think, like, one of the first years when we did the prospect rankings, I had him in my top 25, and I look back now and I say, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, I clearly did not know, like, he hit, like, 300 or whatever. It's just, like, I clearly did not really know anything back then. I still don't know anything, but I knew even less than anything back then.
Well, could have been possibly, maybe, if not for Bevick. He was one of the early thoracic outlet syndrome surgeries, I think.
Yep.
Like really early.
Well, my third baseman did not need thoracic outlet surgery to suck. And my third baseman is Carl Stadjuhar, who played one season, 2017, with the Cyclones. He was drafted in June 2017. He was released in September 17. Honestly, I think he might have been the worst player I ever saw, which is why he will always be remembered by me. He couldn't hit. New York Penn League pitching. He's a horrible defender. He had no speed. He was possibly a zero tool player. But, you know, guys like that, you know, you'll never forget. And hopefully we don't get sued now. Hopefully Carl Stadjuhar is not listening. All right, we will move on now. We have two outfielders. We'll just keep on cycling the way we're going now. So, Thomas, who's your first outfielder?
Cesar Puello is my first outfielder.
Hell yeah, I picked Cesar Puello too.
Yes, because that year that he was evidently on steroids, I was he went nuclear, and I remember it being so fun, like game in and game out, how good he was. Obviously, he was aided by something, but it was still very fun, and it was still that's still a minor league memory, because I think I was probably recapping even at the time, like I just started doing all that stuff for the minor leagues. So, like day in and day out, I'm like, oh wow, like this dude could hit, and obviously things were happening, and he made it to the majors anyway. For cups of coffee and stuff. It's not like he was a pure product of it. It was helping, obviously, but he was still, he's a very fun name. I think about him quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I guess it was like 2013 or 14, I guess is the year that he had the big year. And I remember really sitting down and being like, who am I going to rate first? Him or Wilmer Flores?
Yeah, right. Like that was a thing. Like you had to, he was that much of a prospect really after a season, at least in the organization, probably not nationwide, but organizationally he was a name, he was someone to pay attention to, and it fell apart after the roids. But
and this was also a period in time when the Mets minor league system was system was like at its peak. I mean,
yeah, it was good.
Like you still had, I think, Darno in the system, you still had Syndergaard, Mats, Wheeler, and Harvey probably already were graduated, but
yeah, probably around that time, because they were part of the rotation, I think, in 2014 already, and obviously 2015. Wheeler was hurt and Harvey was around, so.
But yeah, it was a good minor league system, and he was like in our top five one of those years.
So. He was making waves because he deserved it with his play, and.
Yeah, I mean, legit five tools. I mean, I guess not legit because, you know.
Very illegitimate five tool star.
There you go. Ken, who is your first outfielder?
Desmond Lindsay.
The tale of Desmond
Lindsay. He would have been good. Seeing him in Brooklyn when he was like first assigned, and just thinking he was like better than everybody else on the field.
He was.
And then, you know, obviously injury after injury after injury, he didn't become, you know, anything. But that was one of the first drafts I really followed like really closely. So yeah, I'll always have a fondness for Desmond Lindsay.
I really liked that pick because they didn't have a first that year, and that was I felt like that was a really high upside way to. That was Kadire, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that was a really high upside way to replace that, because Lindsay was a high school kid and pretty advanced with all this stuff, but his hamstrings were made of peppermint patties, I guess, or whatever. Like that dude just could not stay on the field. It was crazy. But
I think he hit like well over 300 in his year with the Cyclones. Like,
yeah, he was really good. He was really good for them.
Another guy that, like, when a guy hits really well in Brooklyn, you take notice just because it's so infrequent.
Yep, I agree with that for sure.
I will go with my remaining outfielder here then, Wilmer Becerra, who was with the Mets from 2013 to 2018. And he was the wild card that was thrown in the Dickey trade. And, you know, Travis d'Arnaud worked out very well. And Noah Syndergaard was working out very well. And at first, Becerra, you know, he was working out really well. And, you know, I was not in favor of trading Dickey, but, you know, I couldn't change anything. So the fact that they would have been getting three prospects that would have really, you know, that were panning out, that would have been like, okay, at least the Mets are getting maximum value here. Unfortunately, though, Becerra, he stalled in St. Lucie. He had some shoulder problems, and he had an inefficient swing plane, which is something that we were just starting to kind of like understand in the early to mid 2010s.
He got hit in the face too, right? With a pitch, he broke his jaw.
I think that was when he first came to the Mets.
He was a Met for like a month, and he like it was very early in the season or some shit like that. I remember that specifically.
But yeah, it was fun while he lasted, but he was a guy that, you know, did flash five tool potential, and it just didn't work out. All right. Thomas, who's your second outfielder?
My second outfielder is Patrick Biondi, who...
Oh, nice. I was going to pick him.
He's one of those guys who I feel like a Jake Mangum later on, and just guys like that, where I don't know if you do this when you recap, but I always notice the same guys when they play. It's for some reason Patrick Biondi's name would like be seared into my brain every week. Mm-hmm. I would know that he's going to play. I know that he's going to hit anywhere in the lineup and go 1-for-4 with a walk. You know what I mean? Like, it was never an exciting day. He was probably star of the day once or twice. He probably hit multiple home runs or whatever. He did his thing. But he was never super high upside, and you know he wasn't going to make it, but he's just a name that you see every week because he was never hurt. He was never out of the lineup. So those guys always hold a special place in my heart too.
Patrick Biondi and Champ Stewart always had the possibility to be the most exciting outfield, but
Champ Stewart is another one. Oh,
they just, you know, I mean, they were guys that had one really good tool that gave them, you know, some versatility with the speed. And Champ Stewart also had a little bit of power too, but you know, they weren't complete packages, unfortunately. But they were fun. All right, Ken, who is your other outfielder?
The aforementioned Champ Stewart.
Oh, nice.
Champ Stewart, a very fun player, like you just said. I once bumped into him at Dillinger's after a B-Man game. literally. So, yeah, I'll always be fond of Champ Stewart. What are we doing now?
I don't know. That's a good question. I could see him like running a hedge fund or something. Some sort of white collar work. I don't know why. All right. So my other outfielder was Cesar Puello, who we talked about. So now we'll move on to the pitchers. There's a shit ton of pitchers, so I don't think we'll have any overlap here. All right, Thomas, your first pitcher.
My first pitcher is, let me pull it up because I accidentally closed everything, is Rainey Lara.
Oh, Rainey Lara.
He's another guy who I always feel like I saw messing around, and then he went to the Indies and had like a few years there and went to Mexico and stuff like that. But I mean, he pitched seven seasons in the minor leagues. That's a long time. And he was a good Brooklyn Cyclone, which is why I would have seen him. He had a 2.91 ERA and 12 starts there, which is less impressive as a pitcher than when a pitcher is good in Brooklyn. I'm like, you damn well better be. But he's just one of those guys who, for some reason, that's a name I always remember.
Yeah, I mean, he was part of the greatest rotation of all time. So,
and that rotation was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. He was Rainey Lara, Hansel Robles, Louis Mateo, who else was there? Gabriel Ynoa.
Yeah,
I think there was a fifth guy. Oh, I'm forgetting. Yeah, I'm sure it'll come to me. Ken, who is your first pitcher? Okay, Ken is giving us the silent treatment. All right, well, while he's being angry at us, I will go with my first pitcher, John Church, who is a reliever from 2009 to 2015. I feel like he was the Paul Sewald before there was a Paul Sewald, you know? A reliever that wasn't particularly great, but he was consistently solid, and you always felt, especially when he was in AA or in AAA, that he was going to be that next guy that got called up when they needed another arm for a doubleheader, or, you know, one of the lesser important bullpen guys got put on the DL, but he never got called up. Well, good old John Church. Ken, are you back? I guess not. Okay.
No, I'm back.
Oh, okay. You're back.
You can hear me now?
Yes, yeah, yes.
I've been cutting in and out this whole time. But yeah, so my pitcher is going to be Mickey Janis.
Nice.
The mayor of Binghamton, New Jersey, or Binghamton, New York. I don't know. He spent several years there.
Yeah.
And just a great story. Knuckleballer, you know, grinded for so long and then eventually made it to the big leagues for a fleeting period of time.
Just like the knuckleball, very fleeting. Poetic, yep. Very poetic. All right, Thomas, who's your second pitcher?
My second pitcher is Darren Gorksy, who I always remember watching in like 2015. And he was in Binghamton in 2014 and Vegas in 2015 and 16. And I just always remember he was not good. But I always remember him getting, while I was looking at the minor league box scores, just getting lit up whenever he would pitch. And it's just a name that lives in my brain. And honestly, he's a hell of a lot better than most of the pitchers in Major League Baseball. In professional baseball, just because you made it AAA. Most people can't do that. Mm-hmm, so congratulations to you. You're better than me and everyone else listening to this, I'm sure.
He made the show. He threw 3 innings for the Orioles.
Honestly, good for him. I'm so happy. You telling me that has low-key made my day. So
good for Darren Gorski. All right, Ken, who is your pitcher? Next pitcher?
Marcus Molina.
Good old Marcus Molina.
What could have been.
Yeah, for real.
But he was a guy who was around for a while. Bummer that his elbow gave out. Appeared on many lists, and it's the guy who kind of stuck in my craw.
Yeah, I mean, he was... I don't want to say he, like, burned with a bright light, but he was really good in his...
There was definitely major league reliever potential.
Yeah, definitely. And then when he got bad, he got really bad.
Yeah.
My pitcher is Juan Urbina, who was in the system from 2010 to 2014. And I started following the Mets hardcore around 2010 and started paying attention to the minors. And there were two pitching prospects that John Sickles, who is the SB Nation minor league guy, was really hyping. Henry Mejia and Juan Urbina. And I liked Urbina better because he was a left-hander. And, he also had major league bloodlines. And, of course, that did not work out. And I still follow him on Twitter. And I feel like I really, there's no reason for me to. And I want to unfollow him, but I feel like he has no followers. So I feel bad and I don't want to unfollow him. But... good old Juan Urbina. All right. Thomas, who's your next pitcher?
Oh, my next pitcher is the ace. I'm assuming the ace because I don't remember. Of the 2001 Brooklyn Cyclones, Ross Peoples.
Oh, Ross Peoples. He had a very good ERA.
He had a 1.34 ERA in 15 starts, 16 games in Brooklyn that year. His ERA's got... quite interesting as his career went. He was very good as a young boy. In Kingsport and in the Appy League, he had a 2.61, then a 1.34, like I said, in Brooklyn. Then he had a 2.43 in Capital City, which, that's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got promoted to St. Lucie, which was high A, and he went up to a 5.59, and that's going to tell the rest of his story. Because... in St. Lucie, after that, he had a 5.31 the next season. Then he got demoted back to Capital City, had a 6.35, and then got released. So his whatever he was doing to those kids in the rookie league and at that point short season when he was with Brooklyn was sensational, and then it all fell apart when he got called up. But I'll always remember he was their best pitcher in Brooklyn, and I saw him quite a few times. And I probably have his autograph somewhere because I have a bunch of – I used to go to games really early and get all these guys' autographs. And I absolutely have Ross Peoples' autograph somewhere on a baseball. So
it sucks that during that period of time, like the early 2000s, minor league reporting was really non-existent. I wouldn't even say it was in its infancy yet. It was just non-existent. And there's really no way to like unless you actually have access to something like the team's records or whatever to know, like, okay, what the hell did Ross Peoples throw? Like, what exactly was it that he was doing that made him so effective?
Yeah, it's like we have no clue and we never will.
Yeah. we need to track down Ross Peoples now and ask him, what did you do in Brooklyn that made you so good? Ken, who's your next pitcher?
Joe Cavallaro, right-handed pitcher, you know, junk balling reliever.
Yep.
I've always liked Cavallaro. I like guys with funky arm slots, generally speaking. And I watched a lot of the Columbia team that he was there because that was one of the first years their camera was super advanced. Or like a broadcast level camera. So yeah, I like Joe Cavallaro a lot. Wish him well.
We want to talk about funky deliveries. My next guy, Thomas, I'm sure you remember him, Jake Ruckel.
Oh, yes.
He was in the system 2005 to 2009. You know, I saw him a bit in Brooklyn. Definitely one of the weirdest deliveries I've ever seen, the Ruckel shuffle. I don't even really know how to describe it. It's like Dontrell Willis and Tim Lincecum and Brad Ziegler had a baby.
It was just real weird. Real weird stuff.
Super, super extreme high leg kick, and then a super long action in the back and super open, and then he dropped down and threw like almost sidearm. It was just a lot of weirdness. And like I was saying before about Ross Peoples, like, I wish there was more video, because there's really no video of Jake Ruckel. There's like one promotional video that the Cyclones put out. But I wish there was just better video from the era, because I don't think that description really does it justice, what he did to his body to pitch baseballs. If the pain guy existed back then, he would definitely see problems with Jake Ruckel's delivery, I think. Is that guy still even a thing anymore? I really don't.
He is.
Oh well. Too bad. All right, Thomas, who is your last pitcher?
Oh, boy. Let me go last.
Okay. Ken, who is your last pitcher? I guess he wants to go last.
Because I closed all my tabs, that's why.
Gotcha. My last pitcher is Julian Alario, who is a reliever in the system from 2010 to 2015. I hated this guy so much. It seems like every time his name was in the recap, he was fucking something up. He was blowing a save. He's giving up runs. He's putting the team behind, whatever it was. So, you know, of course, the constant blown saves and just the constant giving up runs, it just sticks in my brain. I will never forget Julian Alario. And of course, you know, the name sounds like hilarious. He was hilariously bad all the time, so it just fits.
Oh, I got a good one. I got a good one.
All right, go ahead.
I'm back.
Oh, okay, you're back. Good.
Yeah, 20... Chris Vial.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Big fan of Chris Vial. He just fell apart being a large human.
Yeah, that literally is what happened.
Mine is 2017 Mets legend Tyler Pill.
Hell yeah.
Tyler Pill.
He was in the system forever, it felt like. It was 9 years in the minor league. He had a strong 4.23 ERA. So, like, he was never going to be much of anything. But he made seven appearances on the 2017 Mets. Three different starts, and he went 0-3.
Really?
So, yeah. Because that team was quite hurt, if I remember correctly. They just ran out of arms.
I was going to say, that was a really bad team, but geez.
They just kind of ran out of arms at some point. And I do remember his debut, because I remember being like, oh, this is not going to be good, and it wasn't. But still, you made the show a lot more than most people could say. Shout out to PJ Conlin, who is in the similar vein here. Guys like that.
Yeah. Love PJ Conlin.
Yeah, he ruled.
Friend of the show.
Yes, for sure. But Tyler Pill spent a very long time in the minors and had varying success up and down the Mets system. And he was always a name that you see in the recaps because, like, he's one of those organizational guys that you always see. And you miss them when they're gone, when they're not in the organization anymore. You're really like, damn. It was comforting to see Tyler Pill giving up three runs in six innings in a quality start in a win. You know, like, it feels like home when you write that on a Thursday night. It feels like home.
Better Tyler Pill have a 4 ERA than some random weirdo you don't even know. Like,
Oh, exactly.
I also really like to see the team, like, do well by a guy who was in their system forever.
Yeah, yep. To call him up and give him a shot when it's very clear that your season's not going anywhere. It's cool for Tyler.
You've been here forever. This will mean a lot to you. Have at it.
Yep. Those are the type of guys who should be playing then.
Completely agree. Well, that was pretty fun. All right. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Slipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. Thomas is at SidMetSeason, SZN. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review it. And of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans connected to the game. Because when you have the best 5G coverage in the game, you don't just get a great signal. You get closer to every pitch, hit, and walk-off, whether you're home or away. So make the switch to T-Mobile, the network with more 5G bars in more places today. T-Mobile has America's largest 5G network. See 5G device, coverage, and access details at T-Mobile.com.